This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
When it's time to go after the biggest buck of your life, you need gear that will not only make your life easier, but that you can also depend on for years to come. Lone Wolf Custom Gear has been the leader in mobile hunting equipment for over 40 years and started out right here in Wisconsin. From inventing the climbing stick to perfecting ultralight tree stands, Lone Wolf Custom Gear continues to innovate and put the best mobile hunting equipment on the market with a ton of fantastic accessories that allow you to customize your gear exactly how you want it. Whether it be the high-end DeQuisto series sticks and stands or the affordable Patriot series, you'll have the peace of mind knowing that you're hanging off of gear that was 100% made in the USA, right here in the Midwest, in fact, and has been designed and perfected by some of the best whitetail hunters in the world. Not to mention, it has an unconditional lifetime warranty that's so good your grandkids and even great-grandkids will be able to use it when they're hunting. Go build your kit out today at lonewolfcustomgear.com.
If there's one app that sees significantly more use on my phone than any other, it's the Onyx Hunt app. And this time of year, that couldn't be more true. Whether I'm still out doing some postseason whitetail scouting or trying to pinpoint where the gobble I just heard might have come from, or seeing whether that field full of strutters is on public or private, Onyx Hunt is my number one tool when I'm making plans on the fly during the day or creating a game plan with buddies for the next morning. This time of year, I absolutely love the compass feature that helps me figure out exactly which direction a gobble came from. And when I'm driving around, I keep Onyx open on my dash thanks to its compatibility with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto so that I can see where I'm at and drop pins on the go while searching for turkeys. Head on over to onyxmaps.com to learn more and get signed up for a free 7-day trial. And while you're there, be sure to check out the entire Onyx family, which includes Onyx fish and trout routes. Turkey season is here, and when it comes time to hit the woods and chase some gobbles, you need gear that's as ready to hunt as you are. That's why I'm proud to be partnered with Huntworth Gear. This spring, I'll be running around the woods in the Durham lightweight pants, which have been my go-to pants for everything the last couple of years. They've got a waterproof seat and knee panels that keep you dry when setting up, and breathable, quick-drying fabric to keep you comfortable after a long walk through tall, dewy grass, or when you're putting on the miles looking for that lonely long beard. On top, I'll be wearing the Grayling Heat Boost hoodie if it's cold and the Camden lightweight hoodie when it's hot. And don't forget the Ames lightweight gloves with fingerless index and thumb holes that give you the dexterity you need to run those calls unimpeded all season long. Go build your kit out today at huntworthgear.com or visit the hunting section of your local farm and fleet or fleet farm to find it in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies. And one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or just looking to get out and try something new. To find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com.
If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd even venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about on this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA chapter was formed to provide a voice to hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved works their tails off to protect public lands and access those public lands and waters.
stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what we have going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Lone Wolf Custom Gear. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, I hope you're all doing well. I hope turkey season is just treating you fantastic right now. I punched a tag this last week. I know a lot of other folks punched a tag, and my goodness, it was just one of those weeks. It seemed like every freaking bird in the woods just wanted to say something. Like, I don't think I've ever heard that many gobbles in, I only hunted for 2 days, but I don't think I've heard that many gobbles in a 48-hour period ever in a turkey season in my life. And I know that was the case for a lot of other folks too. I don't know if it was the cold weather, that little, you know, I mean, we had some frosty mornings there for a while. If it was just the reduction in wind, if it was just, I don't know, something with the pressure or hens going to nest and those gobblers just starting to get lonely. I don't know what the deal was, but it was an absolutely fantastic couple days of turkey hunting. I've still got another tag for this coming week, as well as the following week. I'm going to try and get my dad a bird and hopefully have a success story to share with you guys in the coming weeks here. But you guys, this week, this episode's going to be a little different. All right, I'm flying solo. For the most part, you're going to hear from Ben and Paul from Yellowstone AI Trail Cameras in a little bit here. But I'm flying solo this week because I realized I haven't really gotten a chance to touch base with you guys for a while and fill you in on what's been going on with me and just all the other stuff that's been happening around the state of Wisconsin. One of the things you may have seen was an Outdoor Life article that was published last week about the state of Wisconsin's DNR budget and some cuts and restrictions that are going to be put in place in 2027 due to the limited budget from the Wisconsin DNR. So this article, I shared it on my stories on social media last week and shared a couple thoughts with it as well. But for those of you who didn't see it, just to get you caught up, the title of the article reads, Wisconsin will stock fewer fish, track fewer wolves, and do less habitat work. Budget problems are to blame. Budget issues are nothing new in the state of Wisconsin, unfortunately. This is something we've heard different conservation organizations talk about, as well as folks talking about the Nelson Fund, which was not voted on being renewed. But the DNR has its own budget in the state of Wisconsin. It has been struggling for a little while, and essentially what has happened is we've reached a point where in an effort to reconcile the budget and balance it a little bit, from the article it reads, lawmakers approved a $30 million transfer last year to help balance the account. They did not give the DNR the additional spending authority required to use that money, according to Wisconsin Public Radio. So, in an effort to balance the budget, funds have been transferred to the DNR's budget. However, they're unable to use those. They're just held in place there to keep the budget in check. That said, there are going to be some reductions, according to this article, in the amount of stocking that's done, the amount of research and surveys that are done across the state, and things that otherwise the DNR would be doing were it not for this budgetary issue here. The first that it mentions in this article, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is cutting back next year on stocking muskies, walleyes, other game fish, and pheasants. Two state hatcheries have already halted production for 2027, and the state plans to stock around 500,000 fewer fish than it would in a typical year. The DNR also says it will have to make reductions to other key programs, including wildlife surveys and habitat work. Now, when it comes to the walleye and muskie stocking efforts. It said cuts to this core work in 2027, will include a 70% reduction in muskie stockings and a 45% reduction in walleye stockings. This translates to roughly 40,000 fewer muskies and 300,000 fewer walleyes, according to a recent update from the Fisheries Bureau. That's a lot of fish, okay, to start things off. This goes on to read, on the wildlife side, the cuts will include reducing pheasant stocking by 10,000 birds from 75,000 to 65,000, reducing monitoring surveys for deer, grouse, and other species by 28%, reducing the banding of waterfowl and other birds by 15%, reducing wolf winter tracking by 20%, reducing CWD testing by 10%, reducing forest habitat and grassland habitat management by 33% and 4% respectively, and reducing maintenance by 34% for public use facilities like parking lots, trails, and visitor centers. Read between the lines there. Public use facilities, parking lots, trails, visitor centers, that's all pretty self-explanatory. What a reduction in maintenance looks like, I don't know if that's going to be fewer garbage cans, fewer, I guess, less frequent garbage removal or cleanings, the forest and habitat and grassland habitat management reductions. That one's pretty self-explanatory. The CWD testing reduction by 10%. And I should preface this too. When it says these percentages, I don't know off the top of my head what the baseline number is that we are talking a reduction of. I don't know how much of a hit these respective programs or research efforts are going to see or what exactly that looks like. Like, for example, I don't know if a 10% reduction in chronic wasting disease testing means that there are fewer biologists out there picking up the samples, and so we're going to see an increase in turnaround time for our sample results. I don't know if it means fewer kiosks, so as hunters, we're going to have to travel a little bit further to drop our samples off if that's something that you want to do. You know, the banding of waterfowl, that one's pretty self-explanatory. The monitoring surveys for deer, grouse, and other species, all that stuff, the pheasant stocking, all these are pretty self-explanatory, but none of them are really good. Now, the article goes on to say that while other states have, in an effort to reconcile their own budgets, they've tried increasing license fees for residents and non-residents, so on and so forth. Something that we've talked about quite a bit here in the state of Wisconsin in previous episodes with a handful of different people. But yeah, it's an alarming article. One that I'm, you know, I think it's mostly alarming to see that on a major platform like Outdoor Life, right? It's one thing if we see it in, you know, the State Journal or something like that. But across the board, regardless of the news source, this is troubling information. These are concerning facts that we're going to see these reductions in DNR-funded programs. And as much as it sucks, as much as I don't like to think about it, as I read that, I started to think, what's the solution? How do we combat this? What can we do to try and pick up the slack? Now, whether you're somebody who believes you should pick up the government slack or not, as conservationists, there's a couple things that jump out to me, and I think there's some silver linings here or opportunities to make a pretty good impact as we start to see this reduction in DNR's efforts across the state of Wisconsin. The very first one that I want to touch on is the importance of nonprofit conservation organizations. So when I say these, I'm talking about Ducks Unlimited, Trout Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever, National Deer Association. I think I said Trout Unlimited, but all these organizations that are very habitat and resource focused, right? We talked with Kirk Olson a couple weeks ago, the Inland Waters Trout biologist or fisheries biologist, excuse me. He mentioned what an impact Trout Unlimited has on restoration efforts and how a lot of funding comes from TU and other organizations like that. Same thing happens with waterfowl, wetland conservation, with Ducks Unlimited and Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, all that good stuff. These are the organizations that right now it's going to be really important to engage with, right? Now, a lot of these unfortunately have a membership fee. If spending money on a membership fee is something you're potentially apprehensive about, I'd encourage you to do a little digging on each of these sites and see if there's a breakdown of where your membership fees go, right? So that you know that your hard-earned dollars are going to go to something that's going to give you an ROI on better habitat, better populations, better restoration, all that good stuff, right? On top of that, These organizations do a lot of volunteer days and have a lot of learning opportunities for learning how to do habitat improvement. You can assist with banding programs that are going to be funded through these nonprofits. You can look into organizations that are doing a lot of public land purchases, stuff like that, is going to make a difference and kind of help pick up a little bit of the slack from the DNR here. So the biggest thing is I don't want folks to read that article about, the DNR having these budgetary shortfalls and not being able to do these things and think that all hope is lost, right? I mean, we gotta think of problems, We gotta think of solutions, not problems. Sorry, folks. But in addition to engaging with your nonprofit conservation organizations, now is a really big time to be the best freaking stewards of the land that we can be, right? If we're going to see a reduction in stocking efforts, that means that we need to really value the population that is existing right now and do things that set them up for success, whatever that species may be, whether it's deer, whether it's pheasants, quail. I don't have any quail or anything like that in Wisconsin, but pheasants, grouse, fish habitat, trout stocking programs, stream restoration, all this good stuff. Now is the time to, I guess, if we're going to start on the angling side of things, now's the time to just be really responsible with how we're going about targeting species, right? If we're going to practice catch and release fishing, let's get the hands wet. Let's use a net. Let's do things that are going to set those fish up for success. Let's help them recover after we fought them, hopefully not for too long, right? We want to fight these fish quickly, get them back to the boat or back to the net as quickly as possible so that they've still got energy to go back and recover and they can get back to doing what they were doing. When it comes to fish handling, if you've got a hook that's deep down the gut of a fish or down in the gills or something, let's cut the line. We don't need to rip that thing out. We don't need blood streaming down the side of these fish where we know their mortality rate's going to go up significantly. We can leave these hooks in the fish. They will dissolve or they will pass them or just get rid of them in their own time, right? They can still eat with most of these hooks and things still in them. So being conscious of if we're not keeping these fish, let's get them back just as good as we found them, right? Let's be responsible in that regard. If we are keeping fish, let's start maybe being a little bit more picky about maybe do we need to catch a whole limit day in and day out if we're talking about walleyes who we're going to see a reduction in stocking efforts, right? On top of that, when it comes to pheasant stocking, and all this other habitat work, these other surveys and all that kind of stuff, it's important to keep in mind, we kind of talked about it with Jason Lepardus last week. When he was a biologist in Georgia, he was one of two for the entire state, right? That's not a lot of bandwidth for a DNR or a fisheries biologist or a conservation biologist in general, right? 84% of Wisconsin is privately owned. It's private land, right? That means, and this is, don't come at me about the stats here, but 84% of Wisconsin's wildlife, excluding cities and all that good stuff, right? 84% of that land or of that wildlife lives on private land, right? That means that if we are landowners or we are people who lease land or have permission to hunt on land, now is the time to be the best damn stewards that we can possibly be. Offer to do habitat work. If you're a landowner, let's look into what habitat projects actually are going to make a difference, not just for deer, but what's going to benefit the soil, what's going to benefit the water. If you've got a creek or a river nearby, what's going to prevent flooding? What's going to create nesting habitat for some of our nesting birds or songbirds or anything like that? And just what can we do that's going to make an impact, even if it's a small one? Right? Like the backyard habitat improvements still make a difference. The little prairie blend or the pollinator blend you throw in the front garden instead of, planting a bunch of annuals or something. Maybe looking at our mowing practice. Do we have to mow every single week or twice a week and have this thing looking like a dang fairway, right? Can we get by with something that's maybe going to not use as much water or not require pesticides or anything like that? Because even if we're, and this might sound hippy-dippy, so bear with me here, but hey, deep down, I'm an animal lover, right? So even if it's the little pollinator blend around the mailbox or in the front yard, you're benefiting the area around you, the ecosystem around you. Are we going to have half a dozen pheasants nesting or, you know, hanging out next to your mailbox or in your front yard? Odds are probably not. But you know what you're going to do is you're going to have deeper tap roots. You're going to have pollinators that are going, and the bees and the birds and everything can come out and hit. Your soil is going to improve. You're going to see better bug life. And above all else, you're going to improve that tiny little chunk. Even if it's just, you know, a 10 square foot section, something's going to benefit, right? I think it's just being in the mindset of, yeah, it might be I'm only going to do TSI on my little 5 acre chunk and see what happens there. That little 5 acre chunk might make all the difference to, you know, some deer, some turkeys, some rabbits, some, you know, whatever wildlife you care about. It may have an impact that's bigger than you think. In addition to that, now is really, really important. I mean, we've talked about it a bunch on the public land sale side of things here, but it's super important right now that we get as many people engaged and caring about the outdoors as we possibly can right now. I was talking about this with a friend and she said, that's all great, but as I said all the stuff that I just said, right? She said, that's all great, but very few people even know about or care about these things as much as you do, right? And I did a little digging because I was curious. I was like, well, yeah, like they might not be hunters, but they're, you know, they probably are still fishing or know somebody in their family who's a fisherman or angler or whatever. Did a little digging because I thought, I bet the majority of Wisconsinites purchase a fishing license. I was taken aback to learn that only 1 in 4 adults in Wisconsin purchase a fishing license. And we've talked about the reduction in hunter numbers over the year and the decline in hunter retention and all that sort of stuff. But now is the time that we got to make people care about these things. Springtime's the perfect time to do it, right? There's still a bunch of leftover tags for turkeys in a lot of these zones. The fishing could not be better. Now is the time to offer the neighbor across the road, ask him, hey, I'm getting the boat out. You want to come with? Want to do a little fishing? You want to do a little, turkey hunting with me? I'm going to go tomorrow. We're just going over the hill or, you know, down the road or wherever it may be. But the more people that we can engage in conservation, and whether they're engaged and they want to pull the trigger or they want to go fishing or not, if we can educate them, I think back to some of the field trips that I was fortunate to go on as a kid where, you know, I would have never known about half the species or about Aldo Leopold or about any of this stuff had we not taken the field trip to the shack, had we not taken the field trip down to the Mississippi River Museum in Dubuque, you know what I mean, where I got to learn about fish and how the whole watershed and the system works and everything. Getting this information to the more urban areas is tough, and getting them to care about it is tough, right? But again, now is the time to make as many people care about this stuff and get them interested, whether or not they actually want to hunt or fish. If you can at least explain something to them and teach them something, obviously don't force it upon them, but if we can educate others so that they have at least a background knowledge, when those issues come up on a ballot or they come up across their desk or their newsfeed or whatever, and they can think back and go, huh, you know, I remember that one time I went fishing, so-and-so was telling me about the importance of clean water for trout streams or about habitat for waterfowl or pheasants or whatever it may be, or the benefits of planting pollinators or doing timber stand improvement and stuff. I saw all these prescribed burns and stuff. I didn't know what the heck was going on. Now I understand what it actually does for the soil and all this other stuff. They're going to be so much more willing to be on our side when it comes to actually voting on these things. So bridging the gap and being the best stewards and representatives of the outdoors as we possibly can. Now's the time to do it. It literally could not be any more important to protect these things that we love and stand up for the things that we love in the outdoor space. I know that's something you guys have heard a lot of, whether it be on your social media feeds or your news feeds or across other podcasts or this podcast itself. We've talked about it ad nauseum, right? I'll be honest, I can't tell you how many times I've been talking about this with folks, but we can't let up, right? Foot's got to stay on the gas. We got to figure out how to get through this and how to protect the things that we love and care about, especially if organizations are starting to struggle and not have the bandwidth to be able to do the things that they otherwise were, right, on our behalf. So that's just a piece of news that I wanted to address, right? That's just something that's been rattling around in my head quite a bit. I know it's not maybe the brightest, lightest, most fun news to hear, but you know, I had a couple of people respond to that story and ask, like, what are the things that we can do as we see these shortfalls coming down the pike and there's, you know, fewer, fish being stocked and stuff. Protect the things that we got right now. Like, protect them like hell. That's the biggest thing that we can do as conservationists, is do what we can to make the resources we have, put them in the best possible position for success moving forward so that we can get through this and hopefully come out on the other side even better than we were, right?
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick sec to tell you about Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Lone Wolf Custom Gear is as good as it gets when it comes to mobile hunting equipment. Whether you're a saddle or stand guy, public land or private, Lone Wolf Custom Gear has a set of sticks, a stand, a camera arm, and any number of accessories to get you closer to your target buck. To make it even better, everything is 100% USA sourced and made right here in the Midwest, and it's even assembled right across the river in Iowa by hunters who love chasing deer just as much as you do. To build your kit today, go visit lonewolfcustomgear.com. Now, let's get back to the episode.
So I'm gonna hang it up on that. I'm gonna get off the soapbox. I'll put it that way. Because in other news, there's some pretty cool stuff going on across Wisconsin, particularly in the trail cam space. Now, some of you may or may not have heard of a company called Yellowstone AI. Now, they are a small startup. They've been around since 2020. They're kicking ass right out of Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. And they are making some freaking badass trail cameras that I wanted to get these guys on. I'm hoping to maybe get my hands on some of these in the coming weeks here, so that I might be able to test them out and give you guys a real firsthand review of these things. But I got a chance to sit down with Ben and Paul Anir, who's been on the show, I think back in 2023 or 2024, he came on. We were talking about Wisconsin deer culture and all that good stuff. He's now working for Yellowstone AI after leaving another trail camera company in the industry. But real quick, I'm going to shoot it over to my little conversation that I had with Ben and Paul, so you guys can learn a little bit more about Yellowstone AI trail cameras. All right, phoning in from Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, I've got Ben and Paul with Yellowstone AI. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Pretty good, Pierce. Thanks for the call.
Doing great.
You bet. Yeah. So we've heard from Paul before, I think a couple of years ago now, talking about some Wisconsin deer culture there. But Paul shot me a text a couple weeks ago, was that 2 weeks ago? Yeah. Okay. It feels like longer. I don't know. The turkey season timeline and brain fog is very real right now. But you guys are a brand new trail camera company based out of Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. You guys just won Best New Tech Award at ATA this year. Freaking awesome. Give us a rundown about your cameras and kind of what you guys are all about and what sets you guys apart.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting us, Pierce. And you said that we're brand new, and we get that a lot. We've mm-hmm. actually been selling cameras since 2020, but we're still at a point where a lot of people haven't heard of us. We started with no marketing budget, so we would just kind of scrap and claw and grow by word of mouth. Friends and family would tell their friends and family, and things have kind of spread to the point where we're now competing with the big guys. And like you said, we won a pretty cool award at the ATA show this year, Best New Tech of 2026. And the team is growing, building a dealer network. And some of the things that set us apart are lifetime warranty. So we're the only trail cam in the world that we're aware of that offers a lifetime warranty. And, you know, everyone's conditioned to think like, what's the catch that probably doesn't actually apply to me? There's some lawyer who wrote up something that's going to get them out of this. We don't believe in lawyers. There's no catch. We believe in our product. If you get a chance to feel it and use it, you'll believe in it too. And if something does happen, we've got your back.
That's awesome. Excellent. Could you tell us a little bit more about the cameras and kind of what can we expect from features, image quality, or these cell cams, SD cards? Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, Pierce. So, me coming from the industry background, working with trail cameras a little bit, I guess the first thing that I was super impressed with, like Ben said, just the feel and look of the camera. It feels really well built. Of course, got the lifetime warranty. The camera is super simple to use. So basically pop your cartridge in or your 12 AA batteries, move it over to setup. It's going to auto connect to the best carrier in the area, whether that's Verizon, AT&T, US Cellular, T-Mobile. And even it's going to work with some of those smaller regional carriers as well that lease towers from some of the big carriers. So it's going to immediately auto connect. Soon as you do that, shows you the indicator bars, get a test picture, sends to the app within 10 seconds. So you know exactly how you have it mounted, move it over to on and you're good to go. So just the easy use. That's what I found, most advantageous about the cameras just right from the get go. Just how it's built, simple, the videos and photo quality is great. You can, customize all the settings right from the app, whether you want photos sent instantly, you want to go with an hourly sell rate, however often you want to get those photos, completely customizable from the app. Been using the cameras for a little while now and absolutely love it. Simple to use. And just really well built. So I've been super impressed with the cameras and can't wait to just keep telling people about them.
That's fantastic. Yeah, dude, the 10-second test image, that's huge, because I can't tell you how many times I have found myself just wandering back and forth in front of my camera for 10, 15, 20 minutes, wondering if I've got reception or not, or if that thing's actually going to send, or am I going to get back to the car and then get up to the top of the hill and hopefully have that image, or am I going to have to make another mile and a half long trek back in there? So knowing that you're going to be in the chips right off the bat and have reception, be able to get that image, that's absolutely huge. When it comes to accessories and stuff like that, what can folks expect? Do you guys offer, antenna replacements, different mounting brackets, anything like that?
Yep, good question. So we offer rechargeable battery packs, solar panels, metal bare lockable bare boxes. We do have spare antennas, but as part of our lifetime warranty, if there's antenna damage from a bear or basically anything, we'll send you a replacement at no cost. But we do have spare antennas. But those are our primary accessories. We try to keep things as simple as we can.
That's super cool. When it comes to the cell plans, you mentioned that you can have different settings in terms of when you receive your images and all that. What can folks expect for a monthly cell plan?
Good question. So we've got four different plan options, just like almost everyone else. You've got some on the lower end, some on the higher end. And then at some point within the next month or so, we'll be launching one new unlimited plan as well. More to come on that. But the plans kind of run the gamut depending on whether you want photo, video, what activity level you can expect. But we've got a little something for everybody.
Got it. That's awesome. Well, I'm sold, you guys. And one other thing too, you guys have some pretty cool news in collaboration with the Snapshot Wisconsin program through the DNR. Isn't that right?
Yeah, you heard about that. So
I
that's breaking news right here. So Snapshot Wisconsin is like one of the iconic kind of trail camera projects in the world. And for the last 9 years, I want to say they've been using a different trail camera. Recently started looking for partners who could kind of help upgrade their fleet, bring them into the 21st century. And lo and behold, it was many months of kind of back and forth and testing, but they ended up partnering with us over a handful of other competitors in the space who put in bids. And being Wisconsin local guys who love hunting, for this, not only is it a big, cool thing for our company, but just being based here in Wisconsin, super cool opportunity. So they'll be deploying 1,000 of our cameras throughout the summer and more to come after that.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see the snapshots that come out of that project there. If folks want to learn more about Yellowstone AI and potentially place an order here for some of these cameras, get their hands on them, where can folks go to do that?
So our website, www.yellowstone.ai. They can give us a call. Phone number's on our website. They can text us, email us, chat with us, however they want to reach us. We're here to help.
That's fantastic. Folks, you heard it here first. Go check out Yellowstone AI trail cams. And gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for your time and shedding a little bit of light on this. I'm excited to see another Wisconsin trail camera company making a big splash here. I'm super fired up and can't wait to see these things in action.
Right on, Pierce. Appreciate the time. Yeah, thanks for having us. Thanks, Pierce.
All right, there you have it, guys. That was Ben and Paul from Yellowstone AI Trail Cameras, kicking ass right out of Wisconsin and coming out with some really, really cool products. If you haven't checked these things out, head on over to the website that Ben mentioned there, Yellowstone AI Trail Cameras. Give them a Google, check them out. I'm super stoked to try these things out myself. I actually just got permission or crossed paths with right after I shot that turkey on Thursday, which you guys are going to hear about in just a sec. I crossed paths with a neighbor of mine who's out doing some CRP mowing and stuff. And we got to chatting a little bit and he was like, well, you know, that one point, that one bedding area, if you want to throw a stand over there, by all means, go for it. I've got my stands and I've seen some bucks go in and out of there a couple times and some pretty nice ones too. And I'm not going to get over there and hunt it. So somebody should. And if that's you, by all means, go ahead. So I'm very fired up about that. Big shout out to Dan, because that's very generous of him. But I will be throwing one of these Yellowstone AI trail cameras right down there in that little bedding area, just on the downwind side of it. And I can't wait to try these things out and see what that camera picks up and just put it through the ringer, really. So I'm super excited. But we started this conversation, this whole episode, you guys, kind of talking about how great this past week of turkey season has been, right? And man, was it sweet. Because after my Iowa hunt and just getting my butt kicked, I was starting to have the doubt creep in just a little bit. I was second guessing myself as a turkey hunter and an outdoorsman and just wondering if turkeys even still gobbled, you know? And so I made the trip up to the home farm as I do every year. I was super excited for that one. Had one day to get it done. And I'll rewind. The day before, on Wednesday of season three here, season C, period C, whatever you want to call it, I got up on some public, got out there, same place I went back in 2024, had some good encounters and ended up sending a couple shots over the head of a gobbler that I thought was a lot closer than he actually was. This year, went back to the similar area, heard birds gobbling in the same spot. Was feeling good. Real fired up. It was like a 20 mile an hour wind, which was less than ideal just for the hearing of gobbles. I think turkey comfort levels were dwindling there, but heard gobbles nonetheless and got set up, did a little calling. The only call they would respond to was the glass side of my Weathered Oaks double-sided pot call that Matt Strime, procures over at weatheredoaksgamecalls.com. So I was really leaning into that thing. Got this bird fired up. It kind of hung out down below this logging road and I couldn't quite tell where the heck he was. I ended up moving two or three times. And finally, I got him fired up enough where it sounded like he was coming. And I didn't know where the heck he was, but I tucked in kind of this trail made like a T. And so I was on the stem of it, just on the lower, I guess the inside of the left side of it, right? So like I'm tucked in off this T in the trail on the left bottom of it. So I'm aiming at the stem where it meets the cross section. And I thought that bird, he's going to pop right up onto this cross section here, onto the T, and I'll be great. He's going to come right out there looking for me. He goes quiet for 20 minutes or so. I start getting a little antsy. I'm like, there's other birds gobbling over here. I don't want to just pick up and go chase that other gobble, but who knows what the heck. And so I sit up and I figure, you know what? I'm going to give it one more call just to check. And I get on the mouth call and I give a little, you know, kind of a pop, pop, yop, 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 pop, pop, And this Joker freaking hammers, like, right behind me. Right freaking behind me. So I dive back into the bush that I was leaned up against. And I'm thinking, great. Hopefully he comes right down the trail. A little less than ideal with him coming over my shoulder, but that Joker is going to come right up over down this trail, and I'm going to smack him in the face at about 8 yards, which is closer than I want to, but hey, it's the situation we're dealt. So I wait this bird out for another 20 minutes or so, do a little soft calling, some scratching in the leaves and stuff. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Made no sense. I finally hear this other bird gobbling, and he's just going nuts. He's down the ridge to my left. So I decide, you know what? I'm either going to bump this bird right here, or I'm going to go over and I'm going to strike that bird up and I'm going to try and kill him. I was growing impatient, and I decided to get up, start sneaking through these popple trees, this little thicket down there, and I'm headed towards this other goblin bird, and I set up in this little clearing in the woods, give a couple calls. He hammers right over the ridge on some private, but he's not far, right? As I'm calling to him, I hear a third bird gobble kind of down the ridge from me. I'm like, all right, well, you know, same kind of thing. We got a couple birds to work with here. I'm going to sit tight. I give it a couple minutes. I call again. Don't hear that bird gobble down over the ridge. Don't hear drumming. I mean, I can't hear drumming if he was drumming because it's just bombing wind. But I hunt that bird for 45 minutes to an hour, nothing. I get up. I go down the ridge towards that third bird, and I get maybe another 100 yards down that ridge and I call, and the first bird hammers right back where he had been, like almost like he just didn't move at all. And so I hit the deck. I crawl over behind a deadfall thinking like, okay, well, hopefully I can, you know, maybe call that bird over to here or at least put eyes on him, right? That doesn't happen. I hunt him again for another half hour, 45 minutes or so. And at this point, the coffee is running through me. I got to pee, right? And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to crawl back. I'm going to get over the backside of this ridge. You haven't heard that third bird gobble for a while. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, you know what, just in case, I'm going to go down this ridge like 150 yards, 200 yards. I want to get far away from those other two birds so that if they come in silent, I'm not sitting here taking a leak and I get busted in that regard, right? Now, I get over to this tree, I lean up my shotgun and take a couple steps, angling down into the valley. Lovely view, absolutely wonderful. Wind at my back, of course, learned that lesson the hard way. But we start taking a leak and I maybe am peeing for 2 seconds. And I look down in front of me and out of this thicket at about 25, maybe 30 yards, walks a big old freaking long beard. Just cool as a cucumber, doesn't know what's going on, just out for a stroll. He pops out of there. My face mask is down. I see him. We make eye contact. And that Joker just turns around, ducks his head, and then takes off, goes flying, sailing out across the valley and out of my life forever. So give her a couple shakes, zip up, and pack my stuff because I had to get back and do a little bit of work that afternoon. And so that was my first morning. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to burn myself out. Because in Iowa, I absolutely ran myself ragged. And I think some of you can relate to this. There's something about a turkey tag in your pocket that I feel like it eats at you more than a deer tag does. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's because like deer season is so long that you have more time that you can come to terms with the fact that you might eat tag soup, or you just don't feel the same urgency to get that tag filled. But when you've only got a week with a turkey tag and you can hear gobbles and you know they're around, you have that confirmation that like they're in this area, I'm just not crossing paths with them, or they don't like what I'm doing. There is something just psychologically awful about that. I love it, but I hate it at the same time. You know what I mean? Long story short, Iowa, I didn't take a day off. I was up early every freaking day. I hunted long days into the afternoon, just absolutely kicked my own butt. I decided, you know what, in Wisconsin this year, let's learn from that and let's hunt smart, right? Let's not run ourselves ragged, run ourselves into the dirt and start getting desperate, making risky decisions and bumping birds around and not being patient. Let's slow the whole thing down and let's do this thing right. You know what I mean? Now, after my episode with Jason Lapardus from last week, I had a lot of great turkey information rattle around in my head. One of the things that jumped out to me the most was the use of barred owl calls to not only just locate birds, but get barred owls so jacked up and so pissed off that they will sit there and hoot and holler and make all this racket that drives these toms crazy, so that they're just sitting there. They just do it on their own. You don't have to sit there and start hooting by yourself and hope that you strike one up. Let those birds piss off the turkeys for you so that we can just slip around like a little ghost in the night and set up on these birds while they're up on the limb. Wednesday night, I drive up to my folks' place. I get up there right at about sunset, like right at roosting time. If you're following around on the social media stories, you probably saw some of this stuff. But I set up down the road from my folks' place, had permission on some neighboring properties as well. And when I say there's a lot of turkeys down there, there are so many more turkeys than I ever thought were in existence down there. Like, it absolutely blew my mind this evening. Because again, I'd heard a couple gobbles that morning, but in Iowa, I didn't hear jack squat. But I got up there, and as soon as I pulled off the side of the road, turned off the car, opened the door, I cracked the door, I hear a gobble down the valley. So I'm like, okay, sweet. That's that's a good sign about where he should have been, you know, up in this thicket, kind of above my folks' place. And I hop out of the car, and I'm just listening, you know, because the gobbles are just kind of starting to sound off, I guess. And I'm across from this draw that my buddy Logan and he shot a bird in last year. That's on YouTube if you watch that one. I set up just on the back of the car, just standing there, leaning there. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to impart some of that Jason Lapardus knowledge, and I'm going to see if I can get some barred owls fired up. Now, Jason said in that episode, if you listen to it, that he's seen and heard barred owls come in right above him and start going nuts and start arguing with him. I didn't think it was real. I didn't expect it to be real. You know, I thought, like, I'm going to go out and, like, good thing the only thing that can hear me is turkeys and maybe the neighbors if they've got a window open or something. They're just going to say, like, what is that lunatic doing down there? But I get to the back of the truck and I let out a little woo-hoo, that sort of thing, and don't get a response. I wait another minute. I do it again. I get a gobble. As I'm sitting there, I'm just kind of looking around up and down the valley, listening to these birds gobble. I see a weird silhouette in the kind of dusky sky come in from the north, and it lands in this tree maybe 10 yards from me over the road. And so I thought, no way that's an owl. Like, no freaking way. I've seen barred owls, you know, on occasion while driving and stuff, but I've never had one just come right in on me. And I give it about 30 seconds and I go, whoop, whoop, woo-hoo. And that joker does the same thing back. Whoop, whoop, woo-hoo. And I think to myself, all right, we've established connection here. What's stage two from Jason's talking owls bit there? And I'd never done the owl scream. You know, I'm sure you've seen videos of the hunting public guys do it. I'm not going to do it into the microphone because I'm self-conscious, but I let out an owl scream or screech, whatever you want to call it, followed by that big long whoo. And this thing up on the limb lost its freaking mind. And we heard Jason talk about, like, you know, they start doing the monkey talk, that like that whole thing. He starts going ballistic, losing his mind. After he does that a couple times, I should also say that the screech also got the bird that was up the draw straight across from me to fire off, along with four others that were in the next draw over. So I'm sitting down here arguing with this bird, listening to those turkeys gobble a little bit. And as I'm looking up towards that drainage where I heard the one gobble that I wanted to hunt the next morning, I see two more silhouettes come bombing over from across the valley, and they land in the tree literally right above my car. Now, this video is on the Wisconsin Sportsman social media pages right now. But these two land on the same limb and start losing their minds just like the first one. That first one ended up shutting up and he didn't really make a peep the rest of the time. But these two got up on the limb and just started going nuts. And as soon as they started going nuts, I hear a gobble up the draw, followed by what I thought was a second gobble up the draw, but I later found out that it was only one. But as I'm sitting down there, I count one gobble in the draw across from me. In the next little drainage over, I hear four, whether they're Jake's or Tom's or whatever. On the next ridge over behind my folks' place, I heard another three. Up the draw from their house, I heard another one. Across the road from them, I heard another two. And so I'm sitting there like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Like, do I have 12 gobblers in like a half a mile radius right now? Is that actually happening? And so I'm, you know, there's still daylight. And I'm sitting there just giddy over the fact. I was more fired up that I called in these owls and got them angry than I was about the fact that I found birds and had them gobbling on the roost, right? So I think, you know what? I've got enough knowledge here right now on where these birds like to roost in this area. I'm going to load up. I'm going to rip down the valley to another property that I have permission on and set up across the valley from that. So I get down there, pull off. It's getting darker now, but same thing, man. As soon as I get out of the car, I hear one fire up right behind my my buddy's house up in this little valley. And there's at least one, maybe two, I think. And so I start at level one. I go, don't really hear anything. I immediately jump to level two because I'm just giddy over the fact that I've got owls fired up with my my owl screech there. I let out a big old screech followed by them. And when I say that I pissed off every critter that makes noise in that valley, I literally pissed off every critter that makes noise in that valley. Not only did the two gobblers that were behind my buddy's house fire off, I had another four gobblers on the knob towards me, kind of basically across the, at the mouth of the drainage on the neighbor's piece. I had those two or those three or four, whatever that guy said, those birds fire off like right at me, like super, super loud. But as I made that screech, a coyote down in the bottom below his neighbor's house starts barking. Like, I thought it was like a neighborhood dog, like somebody's pet for a minute there. But that dog starts barking, and up the valley, two, maybe three coyotes start howling, like just full on, like, I mean, we're talking like Balto remixed howls going up the valley, starts howling. That pisses off another three toms that were gobbling way down the valley where those coyotes were. Then that coyote that was down in the bottom by me, he starts howling in response, which then sets off the two birds behind my buddy's place and the three or four that were out on the knob. So I'm giddy because I don't know how I did this at this point. So I go home, super fired up, got some fun videos of it all, and just like hearing the pure chaos that ensued and all that. So I'm thrilled because I've got, I mean, at this point, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, conservatively 17, maybe 18 birds that are feasibly in play for tomorrow, which is a very good problem to have. I know this, and I don't know how I stumbled upon that many birds or that many birds were gobbling. But the next morning, I think, you know what? We're going to stick to our guns because I don't want to pressure these spots too much because I'm taking my dad turkey hunting next week and or this week as it comes out. And I'm hoping that I can keep these birds unpressured. If I get a bird, I want to get in, get out, and not disturb any birds except for the ones that I killed, right? And so I slip in the next morning. I get in, go up this draw. At the mouth of the draw, I decided to go to the neighbor's place where Logan had shot his bird last year. I get to the mouth of the draw. I do a couple of owl hoots, just the level ones, right? Just the whoo, 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 whoo. And I do that once, give it a minute, do it again. Sure enough, another barred owl up on the ridge starts doing his thing. I'm like, great. And he keeps going, just on his own. He keeps going. So I'm like, awesome. I'm just going to start walking in because he's going to hopefully do the work for me and keep these birds, get them hammering right off the bat. And after I get about 200 yards past that spot, I get up into the corner of this property where I wanted to get to. Three toms gobble way back where I first owl hooted. And what I realized was the night before when I pulled up, parked the car, and was standing out there, those birds were already on the limb and I could hear them. Excuse me. Birds were already on the limb and they could see me, which is why I'm assuming that they were quiet. Either that or they got in after I left. But either way, they were like right in that area and just happened to stay quiet while I was there. So immediately I'm like, son of a gun. Because as the morning went on, I heard those birds fly down, right down into this pasture, probably like 150 yards from where my car was parked, and then worked down across the road on another piece of private there. And so that was a bummer. But long story short, my morning begins with learning that I had A, passed those three toms on my way in, and B, I had decided to choose the one draw that had one lone gobbler with four hens hanging out with him. And so I do a little bit of calling and all that. That bird gobbles. I can hear the birds in the next draw over just going nuts where I heard there were just three or four of them. And so I'm like, son of a gun, like, do I pick up? Do I ditch it? I don't know. Like, I feel like it's too late right now. Let's just ride this thing out. And I'm set up there, same tree that Logan and I were on last year, same decoy setup, all that good stuff. I start calling a little bit and that hen starts responding. Now this one hen that was roosted next to the tom, she yelps, that tom gobbles. She clucks, that tom gobbles. She looks the right way and that tom gobbles, right? He is very, very keyed in on this hen to a point where I, no matter what calls I make, no matter what I do, I ran the gamut. I tried three different mouth calls and both sides of the Weathered Oaks double-sided pot call there. He didn't care. He wanted nothing to do with it. A lot of other birds did, but that bird did not. And so those birds eventually fly down. I cross over to the other side of this little draw there. I start calling, don't really hear anything. I can hear that group of birds, that group of gobblers from the next range. They're working away from me. So bummed as I am, I decided, you know what? I'm going to pack up. I'm going to run back to the house. It was freezing that morning, I should add. No wind, but it was like down in the valley. I think it was like 27, 28. Like it was not warm. And so I'm chilly. I go back. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to grab a cup of coffee, have a little reset here, and then figure out what's going on. So I go to my folks' place, fire up some coffee, run up on top of the hill, do a little calling. I can hear a bird, not hear him. I can see him strutting way out in this cornfield that I've seen many a tom like to just hang out in and not even look in the direction of a call. So I know that's a lost cause. And on top of it, I don't want to pressure that area just yet, knowing that I'm going to take dad out there soon. And so I decided, you know what? I'm going to ditch it. I'm going to go down the road to my buddy's place and see what I can do there. Because by this point, it was like 8:45, getting close to 9 or so. And I know that this piece oftentimes holds birds as they start to come out of the fields and then they start filtering through, whether they're going to do a little bit of nesting, whether they want to look for shade, whether they just want to like eat bugs and stuff in this meadow. He's got a really nice oak savanna type property and killed a lot of birds out there in that 8:30 to 9:45-ish range. And so I go out there and same thing, man. As soon as I open the door, birds gobbling. I should mention too, as I pulled in, went up the driveway, went through his gate. There's a meadow down to the left. I looked down in that meadow and there's a turkey. I couldn't tell what it was. Couldn't see a beard. The grass was too tall, but I see a turkey down there. So I'm like, all right, well, that's a good sign to begin with at the very least. I go park, hop out of the car. I hear a bird hammering right back by this gate. So I'm like, great. That was a tom. That's super cool. I decide to grab my decoys, all my stuff, walk this ridge. I'm just listening. In my head, I'm like, hey, buddy, don't repeat your mistakes. Don't be an idiot here. Just be patient. Be quiet. Wait until you are in position. You know exactly what that bird's doing before you make a sound, before you show your hand whatsoever. So I find a cluster of oaks.
I learned that one of the, like further down on the point where I've killed birds before, some kind of scrub brush that was starting to grow in that was about like thigh high. So I knew I wouldn't be able to shoot through that. It was kind of hard stemmed and also wouldn't be able to see very far with it. So I set up further out onto this, into this point than I normally would, and throw the decoys out, get set up. Don't have a ton of cover, but there's enough kind of like scrubby, like buckthorn type stuff that I can kind of hunker in at the bottom of this tree, almost laying like, or sitting kind of with my feet cocked off to like a 45 degree angle away from my decoys so that, you know, I can shoot. I'm a lefty. I've got my right knee maybe halfway to those decoys and my left, you know, basically the decoys are just beyond it. So I can have my gun resting on my right knee. And ideally, if a bird comes in from the left, I'll be able to shoot him before he reaches the decoys. Or if a bird comes in from the right, I'll be able to swing comfortably with minimal movement and shoot on either side of these decoys and be in pretty good shape. So all that to say, this bird is gobbling back by this gate up on this ridge, and it sounds like he's just going back and forth the entire time. Like he's kind of going left, right, but he's gobbling his ass off. Like every call I make, he's responding, to the point where not only is he responding, but down across the valley on the neighbor's property in this field, I strike up another three birds. And so there's two birds up in this field that are gobbling, and one of them I hear break. He drops down into the bottom, and I know he's in the bottom behind me. And so I'm thinking, okay, like worst case scenario, if this first bird doesn't work, hopefully the second bird comes up out of the bottom, pops up. Won't be great because he'll be coming over my shoulder, but hopefully this bird comes up, sees my decoys, walks past all that buckthorn, comes in, and I can get a crack at him, right? Now, when I say that this first bird was stubborn, I mean, holy smokes, was he stubborn. I tried just about everything, and it wasn't until I got on the mouth call and just got as aggressive as I've ever gotten on a mouth call, I think, like just going nuts. And at that point, he finally, bow, bow, bow. 10 seconds, 15 seconds go by, bow, noticeably closer. Like, I know at this point, like that bird's freaking coming. Great. So I'm like, awesome. Shut up. Get ready. Let's freaking do this thing. Now up to my left, kind of going up the hill, was like a 2-foot little knoll, a weird little rise in the terrain. And I've been thinking about it, as I set up there, like it would suck if a bird came around that, or like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't be able to see him coming down through the field to me. I was like, whatever, it's not close enough that it's going to really be that big of an issue. If he pops out, he'll be in shooting range guaranteed, and I'll be able to just hopefully turn, and he'll be distracted by the decoys enough that I can let drive and I'll be in good shape. So safety comes off. Not yet, actually. Gun is shouldered, heads down, face mask, you know, pulled all the way up, the whole routine there. About a minute and a half goes by. And I hear kind of a, I was like, is that spitting? Like maybe drumming? I don't know. And you know how drum, like when they're drumming, it can sometimes sound like it's coming from kind of every direction. And so I hear, okay, it's definitely drumming. Great. Where the hell is he though? That's what I don't know. And so it sounded like he was coming off to my right. And so I thought, okay, this would be a real predicament here if I have that bird from the bottom come up over my shoulder onto this point. He's going to come up from the right. Meanwhile, this other bird sounds like he's coming down maybe from the left, but he should be coming. Like maybe he took a weird loop around and came up. He's going to come up over the right. Either way, it sounded like the drumming was coming from the right, but I was scanning left the entire time. And as I'm listening to this drumming, scanning to my right, I look back left and I see a freaking bright red and white head. And this bird comes strolling in full strut, super slow stepping, like, I don't know. This bird had more swagger than any tom I think I've ever seen in my life. But he's sitting there, kind of faces towards me, faces back towards the decoys, faces back towards me, fan tilt, all that whole 9 yards there, just putting on a show. And at this point, I'm anxious. I'm like, I don't care about getting the experience of watching that bird come in and try and beat on the decoys or anything like that or whatever. I'm not filming anything. Screw it. I need to fill this tag. And so I get my bead on that thing's head while he's facing me. And then he slowly rotates back towards the decoys and gives me a profile shot. Safety's been off since I heard him drumming.
and I squeeze off and smoke him right in the side of the head. He flips over, barely flops whatsoever. I pop up. I'm stoked. Get over there, grab him. He expires and get to do the old, I just got a turkey routine, you know? I get to FaceTime the girlfriend there. She knows the only time I ever FaceTime her, ever. Because I'm an Android fella, you know? And so she's in her iPhone world. So she doesn't, well, we don't get to FaceTime really ever. But I use the old FaceTime feature on Snapchat and FaceTime her. She knows right off the bat. She immediately picks up. She's like, "You got one?" I was like, "Yeah, I freaking got one." Yep. I give her the story, show it off a little bit. She's stoked. I grab the bird, grab my decoys, all that stuff or whatever, go back and stop at the car, bring the bird over to my buddy who's in the house and everything. We chat and high five and, you know, are catching up and everything. And it's really the only time I get to see him is, you know, this time of year, but he's generous enough. He's an older guy and he's generous enough to let me come out and run around like a freaking Yahoo and chase these birds. So that's my turkey tale, you guys. I can honestly say it was an absolute turkinado of gobbles. I've never heard anything like it. It has me so unbelievably excited to get my dad out in the turkey woods and exercise my new barred owl calling skills to get my dad hopefully fired up and get to, I don't know, he's a guy who, and you'll hear about this, I think regardless of whether we get a bird or not, which I think the odds of us getting one are, I'm not going to say that because now it's not going to happen. But my dad did not grow up in a hunting family. Like he started hunting basically when he and my mom bought the property that they live on now that I grew up on, which happened to be just overrun with deer. He came about hunting through some of my mom's coworkers' husbands who were big hunters and everything and really started hunting deer because I think they hit like two or three or something like that in a year. And after a while, he was like, "All right, you know what? There's too many deer around here. It's time that we figure this thing out." And he has since found a lot of enjoyment in the outdoors. You know, he'd go on trips and stuff with these same guys up to Canada and stuff when I was a kid and, you know, go on fishing trips and everything. And, you know, he's one of the guys that, he's the reason that I, you know, do the things that I do now and that, you know, I've made the business choices that I've made and, you know, the pursuits that I've made with, like, you know, starting a couple of businesses and just he's the reason that I got this start in the outdoors. You know, even if he didn't have the answers, he was right there wanting to figure them out with me. And so if I can get him a turkey and hopefully share that with him after everything that he's shared with me, I think that'll be pretty freaking sweet. So I'm excited to get him out. He's on a work trip in Brazil right now. Or actually, as this comes out, he'll be getting back. So I don't know if he'll be up for a 4:30 a.m. wake up on Wednesday or not for the start of his season. But regardless, we've got plans to squeeze in a couple of hunts, whether it be this week or during season E, because I'm going to be, my guide schedule filled up a ton and I'm not going to be able to turkey hunt hardly at all during season D here. So I'm super excited. But you guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode, for listening to the tale of the Turknado. Like I said at the beginning of this thing, get involved with those conservation organizations. Be good stewards of the land. Just be conscious with the things that we're engaging with and taking off the landscape and everything, and be looking to see what can we do to make things a little bit better on this property. And of course, go check out Yellowstone AI trail cameras. I'm super excited for Paul and Ben. It's just awesome seeing a cool company like that winning big awards coming right out of the state here of Wisconsin. So with that, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Good luck in the turkey woods, and we will talk to you all next Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Onyx Hunt,
Huntworth Gear, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.